not going to tell them that I told you over the weekend that a lot of your parents are actually 10 times worse than you are, and that I'm going to tell the church that I'm saying this to you, but I'm actually saying it to your parents, which gives me a great cover for greater boldness, because I can act like I'm being real bold to you when really what I'm trying to say to your moms and dads are, put your phones down, right? So thank you very much. Listen, we spent the weekend talking about this, and I made real clear to the kids up front, first of all, that I don't want to make the mistake that I kind of encountered early on. For the first up till about fourth grade, I believe, we were in a real conservative church, and we are a conservative church. Central Baptist Church is a conservative church. We believe in the inerrancy of the Bible. If you're visiting today, I want you to know this. The inerrancy of the Bible, we believe Jesus is the only way to the Father. We believe in heaven and hell. We believe in the bodily resurrection of the dead. We believe in the second coming of Christ. We believe that Jesus is truth and the truth and the only truth. But I grew up up to just a very certain point as a young person. I encountered what we might call a very legalistic approach to these things. And I was sharing with the deacons this morning in our deacons meeting that one of the great dramas of my family was when the minister of youth at that church, when we were there, told my oldest brother that his Huey Lewis and the News albums were of the devil. That's how it was pronounced at that time, with a B. It was of the devil, and he needed to burn them if he loved Jesus. And there was this weird episode when my father's in town, by the way, he may remember this, when my parents were on the phone with the youth guy, and I heard these spirited discussions about the lyrics of Huey Lewis and the News, wondering what was happening. And that's one particular approach. I also recall when I was a kid, somewhere along the lines, I started encountering these Jack Chick tracks. Any of you ever read Chick tracks? Yeah, these Jack Chick tracks and comic books. They were really, really kind of something. Some of you may love these, so let me just go ahead and give you a preface. You're about to really be offended by me. I don't mean it in that way, though. If you love these, anyway, whatever. One of the things I'll never forget. My dad came and he said, "What you reading?" I said, "I'm reading this Jack Chick comic book." And I was, you know, this little kid, and I was a good little kid growing up, and just kind of at that time, kind of a fear-based religion. And he said, "Well, what's it say?" I said, this is saying that the same drum beats used in modern rock music were used in the deepest interior of Africa by tribes when they were cooking missionaries in big pots to eat them. Thank you, Stan. Which really became problematic when I first heard Creedence Clearwater Revival, and I had a real crisis on my hands because I knew that I liked that better than Michael W. Smith, but I also wanted to love Jesus. So I went from smuggling Creedence on my little tape Sony Walkman with the little orange earbud things, laid in my bed and listening to music. But I want to thank my dad publicly at that time when he read that. He probably doesn't even remember this episode. He said, "Let me see that magazine," and he took it and he threw it in the trash. And it was a statement to me, and this was the statement. The point isn't that you're not careful about what kind of music you listen to. I was raised to be careful not to listen to obscene things, ungodly things. There are movies you should walk out of. There are radio stations you should turn off. There are CDs you should, or whatever, however you get music, you should just get rid of it. But that kind of extreme usually ends up creating deeper immersion into these things. So for instance, my approach with the youth this weekend was not, "Your cell phone is bad, get rid of your cell phone." It was not, "Your social media account is bad, get rid of your social media account." My point was this: it is a morally neutral thing in and of itself, but morally neutral things can become spiritually toxic if we are overly immersed in them to the point that they begin to shape our hearts, minds, and souls. Amen? So what I said to them was this: some of you may be just right where you need to be. Some of you, there may need to be some minor adjustments. And parents, I just want to acknowledge this in case it happened. I said, some of you may need to go throw your iPhone in the lake. I mean, it's just up to you. You know where you are. And I'll say this to you as adults. It may be that some of you need to take drastic steps. I don't know. And maybe that some of you need to take kind of medium steps, and maybe that you're right where you need to be. But here's the problem. Increasingly, it's secular culture who is waking up to the fact that something is wrong. Something is wrong. I'll show you a few of the headlines I showed the kids. Here's one. Excess cell phone use may mean anxiety and depression. I had to pick this out of countless articles with basically the same headline, saying that young people, college age more than high school, if I'm reading this correctly, and young adults even after college are experiencing deep levels of depression because of over-immersion in social media. Here's another headline. Your iPhone is making you depressed. Here's another. That was from Huffington Post. CNBC, teens are more depressed and isolated than ever because of smartphones, researcher claims. And then let me show you one more. This is from The Atlantic. Have smartphones destroyed a generation? So we don't apologize for kind of sounding the alarm and taking a whole weekend to talk with our kids about this, but what I'd like to do is talk with you about this as well. How do you carry a cross if you can't put down a phone? I mean, Jesus said, if you would be his disciples, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. Now, if you can do both, phenomenal, great. And I think there are people who can, people who it doesn't have a power over, people who seem to use it for what it should be, a tool. But for a growing number of us, it's an increasing problem. As was said in that spoken word at the beginning, this kind of obsession where our attention spans are being whittled down more and more and more. And I remember when Seinfeld was on television, everyone was talking about how they were comparing the rate of a fixed camera angle in Seinfeld compared to fixed camera angles in sitcoms of 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. And what they were discovering is that even then they were giving warnings about the way popular television is rewiring our brain. We can't focus anymore. And I shared with the kids that I got rid of my iPhone about, I don't know, a few months ago and went to my old school flip phone. It's phenomenal. By the way, just a heads up, no, I don't hate you. It just takes me a long time to text now. I got to cycle through the letters. So please understand, I'm not being curt with you when I put the letter K. It took me 8 minutes to get that letter out. I'm just doing the best I can. It's just going to be shorter text from now on. Sorry. But this whole effort for me to be able to say, you know, I was tired of waking up and hitting the weather app and then hitting email and then laying there responding to email and then hitting the news and then hitting this, just got tired of it. This is just me, not you. I'm just saying for me, I thought I'm being conditioned. What's happening now for the rest of my life? I'm gonna be 90 years old one day and wake up and the first thing I'm gonna do is, trying to find my phone. And if they bury me early, I'm just gonna go crazy in the casket. I'm gonna go, boom, boom, where's my phone? That won't be my biggest problem, I don't guess, but on the other hand, I could text maybe and say, help, start digging. I don't know. What is it with you? What is it with you? I'd just like to make two very simple points this morning about our focus. And the first point I want to make is this. The fixations of our eyes both reveal the true state of our hearts and shape the hearts they reveal. The fixations of our eyes, guys, what you look at, what your eyes are focused on, they first of all reveal the state of our heart. You look at what your heart drives your eyes to look at. As we talked about this weekend, and parents, just a heads up, we did talk about this. Someone who's looking at pornography on their phone didn't just do that in a vacuum. They looked at that because their heart wants to look at pornography. Someone who's addicted to online consumerism and shopping. Someone who's obsessed with selfies. Someone who's obsessed with constantly projecting a mirage image on Facebook or Instagram or wherever. Someone who's trying to create this impression that your life is just like, I don't know, one of those absurd Old Navy commercials where everyone's flipping around and happy and laughing all the time. I don't know. That's an addiction. By the way, that's pornography. A selfie can be pornography if you're being titillated by it and what you think it's doing to how other people view you. A picture of your meal can be pornography if you keep posting pictures of your meal with in an effort to try to say, hey, look, I'm hip, I'm cool, I'm eating this. Look, look, look. Not that there's anything wrong with posting a picture of your food. That's not my point. But my point is anything can become pornography, right? If it just takes hold, if it becomes compulsive, habitual, anything like this, it becomes pornographic and obscene. So the fixations of our eyes reveal the true state of our hearts, but then also they turn back and shape the hearts they reveal. So a person addicted to pornography looks at it because their heart wants to see it, but as they look at it, it goes back in and shapes the heart. It becomes a cycle. It builds it up more and more. And this is why these things are hard to break, these addictions. In Mark chapter 7, Jesus makes this point. He says in verse 20 this, and Jesus said, he said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. I always chuckle at these, used to always watch these after school movies, and the point of the after school movie was just believe in yourself. No, believe in yourself. You can do it. You can overcome this trial. Just believe in yourself. And I used to watch that. Hey, youth, I want to tell you something. Listen to me. Don't believe in yourself. Believe in Jesus and let him change yourself. Then you can believe in yourself. But to believe in yourself as if we're just somehow naturally good, as if we just are naturally moving Godward. We're not naturally moving Godward. We're naturally moving selfward. And as we enclose ourselves more and more in ourselves, we're naturally moving more and more towards hell. Jean-Paul Sartre said, hell is other people. I'd just like to protest and say hell is the self. Hell is when you are locked in the prison of yourself. This is why C.S. Lewis said that the door of hell is always locked from the inside. And it is the one place where after a lifetime of saying, God, would you leave me alone? God says, okay. These things are cultivating a sense of isolation and loneliness, but we're isolated and alone with our hearts, and our hearts need to be changed. Jesus says, hey, it's out of the heart that evil thoughts come, sexual immorality, theft, murder, etc. But then he says in verse 23, all these evil things come from within and they defile a person. So check this out. That's the outward movement back in, verse 23. It's out of the heart that you get coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. But these things, these evil things that he just mentioned, they come from within, but they also defile us. So they compel us into godlessness, and then they come back with a vengeance and make us more godless. So guys, I just want to say to you, listen, what you look at matters. Hey, what you look at matters, and what you look at, as studies suggest, every 4 minutes matters a lot. The thing I am trying to suggest is that there is a spiritual and theological component to going to a restaurant and watching two people in their mid-30s stare at their phones for 80% of the meal. It's not just that they really like their phones. It's that even something like this can become a tool for degrading us as human beings. Our relationality, our ability to be together, our ability to commune with one another, it reflects our hearts. A person who sits through an entire meal and stares at their phone instead of another person who is created in the image of God and may be called mom, dad, brother, sister, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, son, daughter, a person who chooses a screen over that is a person whose heart needs to be made right. John Calvin said that the human heart is an idol-making factory. It's like a conveyor belt. It constantly produces idols. And in our age, the idols have screens. What you look at reveals the state of your heart, and it shapes the heart that it reveals. And the second point I want to make is this. To follow Jesus, we must lift up our eyes from the things that enthrall us to the glory that should overwhelm us. But we must look up. Umberto Eco recently wrote an article about the sheer delight, not recently, he's dead now, but it's his first posthumous book, so I'm not that far off. He died last year, the book just came out. But he was talking about the delight he had in walking down a street in Italy and seeing a young person walking towards him with their head buried in their cell phone and watching that person walk directly into a pole. And he said it occurred to him at that moment that he could have said, "Hey, watch out, there's a pole." But he said he realized that a better life lesson would be learned to just let the person walk into the pole. You know, back in the day, in the days of Jesus, there were these groups of people called the Bloody Pharisees. These were people who were very strict about not violating the law. And one of the laws they did not want to violate was looking lustfully upon a woman. So what they would do is they made these coverings for their eyes. This is a true story. Made these coverings for their eyes so they could not look to the left or right. But the problem is it really blinded them to what was happening. So they were called the Bloody Pharisees because they kept walking into objects and people and buildings and walls and doors and knocking their head, busting their heads open. What's ironic is that 2,000 years later, after we laugh at that, we're doing the same thing with our little screens. We're just oblivious to what's happening around us. And I just want to say that while an iPhone or a Samsung or whatever is not inherently sinful, it is shaping your heart. Anything we do shapes our hearts. While it's not inherently sinful, there's actually very few things that are purely neutral, spiritually speaking. What you look at is shaping your heart. So to follow Jesus, we must lift our eyes from the things that enthrall us to the glory that should overwhelm us, but we must look up. Hey, guys, green shirts, listen up. I really think that the key to all of this has less to do with putting your phone down than it has to do with finding something that is more enthralling, fascinating, beautiful, and captivating than what's on your phone. And I would like to suggest to you, if you will hear this, and I know some of you have grown up in church, and you may think, oh, whatever, I've heard this my whole life. The beauty of Jesus Christ, properly seen and understood, is more beautiful, overwhelming, captivating, unbelievable than anything you're looking at on your phone. If we were to understand what Jesus has done, who Jesus is, who God is for us in Christ, we would never again substitute anything to the level and point of addiction other than the glory and beauty of Jesus. And what I want to tell you is this: the Bible is filled with calls and exhortations to lift your eyes up. I mean, it's almost axiomatic in Scripture that to see what God's doing, you've got to look up. In John 17, we read that Jesus himself, when he entered into the high priestly prayer, he prayed for the world. It says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that the Son may glorify you." The countenance, the visage of Christ is upward focused. He's looking into heaven. The same happens in Genesis 13 when God calls Abram, who becomes Abraham, to his great life, who is one of our great fathers in the faith, Abraham, one of the great patriarchs. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, westward, for all the land that you see I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring can also be counted. Arise, walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you." Abram, Abram, look up. I can't show you what I'm going to do with you and for you and through you if you're looking down. I need you to look around. Has it occurred to you that the devil is always trying to make the focus of man smaller and less significant. He fixates our eyes, or he tries to get them fixated on small things, paltry things, things that don't matter, distractions. So Abram, lift up your eyes. In John 4, Jesus says this, verse 35, do you not say there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest. God is doing something in the world, Jesus says. He's coming again. He has come and he's coming again, and he's at work, and judgment is coming and salvation is coming, and the fields need laborers. So you've got to look up and see. Time and time again, guys, we see that people would miss the great adventure God has for them if they can't look up. And what I'm trying to say to you is, if your phone and if your computer and if your tablet and if whatever has reached the point where it's keeping you from looking up into the great adventure that God has for you, listen, get rid of it. Whatever it is, get rid of it. God cannot use a people who are staring at their feet all day. But he wants to do something great. Now, if you can do that while having social media, fantastic. Good for you. Seriously, no sarcasm, good for you. But if, like a growing number of people, these things are an impediment to you looking up, then get rid of it. Jesus said, if your hand offends you, cut it off. It would be better to go through life with one hand than to have two hands and be cast into hell. If your iPhone offends you, cut it off. Throw it away. Get rid of it. Do whatever you have to do. Can I say something to you guys? Listen, hear me on this. I'm going to tell you something that you may not believe. You can do with technology literally whatever you want to do. More scandalous statement still. You don't have to have that social media account. Now again, hear me, go back to the beginning of this sermon. I'm not saying, I told you this weekend, social media bad, Jesus good, social media bad. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if it's getting in the way of Jesus, just get rid of it. Turn it off for 6 months. Give yourself 6 months to evaluate. Go back to it and look. I mean, what is God calling you to do? What's he calling you to get rid of? What's a hindrance in your life? You can do whatever you want to do. Ronnie and I, when we were first married, we didn't have a television. And we got rid of a television, and we have one now, hashtag Hallmark Channel. And we have and Sci-Fi, and ESPN. But we have one, and we've had one most of our marriage now. But I remember the first couple of few years of our marriage, we read to each other, and we still read to each other. I read to Ronnie, but do you remember how much more we read to each other when we didn't have a TV? I think about that, and I remember a friend of mine, he said, you don't have a TV? And some of you don't have TVs, and you've never had one. Good for you. And he said, you don't have a TV? I said, no, we just don't. I mean, it's not we didn't join a monastery or a cult. We just didn't want a TV. And I'll never forget, someone said to me, I don't think that's healthy. And I think I misunderstood. I said, no, we don't have one. And they said, no, I know, I don't think it's healthy. I think that's a little extreme. Somewhere a few years before that, my dad had given me a copy of Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, which everyone should have to read before they're allowed to be called a grown man. And there's that in 1984, but there's a scene in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 where everyone's sitting in their houses, and when was that written, the 60s maybe, something like that, 50s, 60s, I don't know, but so everyone's sitting in their houses, and Bradbury depicts that an entire wall of the house is now a television screen, so everyone's just sitting there watching the walls. Guess what came out some years after that? flat screens. I mean, every time I see them, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. I think, you know, Ray Bradbury was right. We're all addicted to this. By the way, if you're sitting here, you're like, I got no problem with this, just the kids. Get on them. Get on the kids. I got no problems with this. Hey, you can look at Farmer's Almanac and it can be porn. I mean, don't just applaud yourself. I don't got a problem with Facebook. Yeah, I don't know. If you go down to the Five and Dime and sit there all day with the old boys and spit tobacco juice and talk about the same dadgum thing while letting ministry pass you by because you're 70 and don't think God has anything to do with you, that's porn. Congratulations. You just got more boring porn than other people's porn. You know what I mean? And then you just deep fried it in self-righteousness and ageism. Ah, it's not me. Yeah, it is. There's a lot of 80-year-olds addicted to porn. It just goes under different names. Soap operas can be porn. Uh-oh. Am I right? Am I making it up? I mean, anything that you're just addicted to. I gotta have my shows. Porn. Congratulations. Congratulations, you're a porn addict. How dare you? Oh, come on. Tell me that guy and that girl, and you've been waiting for 3 years for them to finally kiss each other, you're going to tell me that's not unhealthy? That's not some sort of addiction? Of course it is. You'd be addicted to anything. Lift up your eyes. What do you need to lift your eyes up from? The mirror can be pornography. The obsession with self. You take 200 pictures, so you go through them and cull out about 199 so you can have one that makes you look somewhat like Angelina Jolie. That's a problem. That's a problem. I took 6,000. I wanted one that made me look like Ryan Gosling. I just got frustrated and ate cookies instead. It's all in what you got to look up. What do you got to look up from? What are you addicted to? What are you addicted to? I mean, I think the classic text is Isaiah 60. Can I just share this with you in closing? Arise. God's telling his children here that he hasn't forsaken them. He has a plan for them, right? By the way, those Amish romance novels at Mardell, porn. Yeah. Yeah. I don't look at bad things. I just read 8,000 Amish romance novels every day. Yeah, know exactly what you're thinking when Obadiah looks at Sarah across the table at the barn raising. Come on. I mean, just don't be self-righteous about it. Oh, Obadiah. Isaiah says this, arise. Listen, arise, shine, for your light has come. He's talking to his children. Youth, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you. And his glory will be seen by you. God wants you to be intoxicated by his glory and interpret all of reality by his glory. C.S. Lewis said, I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun rises, not because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. Lift up your eyes all around and see. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from afar. Your daughters shall be carried on the hip. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and exult because the abundance of the sea shall be turned to you. The wealth of the nation shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. The young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense, and they shall bring good news and the praises of the Lord. All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered to you. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister to you. They shall come up with acceptance on my altar, and I will beautify my house. Listen, God is trying to do something beautiful, but we keep missing it because we're looking down. Look up and see what God is doing in your life. Do not reduce your waking moments to a screen. Whatever you need to do, do it so that you can see the glory. And if that means going cold monastic on it, go monastic. If you want to go 1982 fundamentalist, Huey Lewis in the news, go for go, whatever I just said. Bring the camera and bring your phone, just set it on fire. Turn on some Striper or Petra and just jam out. Whatever, I don't care, but look up. Look up. This is not an invitation for you to micromanage the person in the pew next to you. Yeah, he needs to, no, you look up. God will tell her what to do. What about you? What are you missing because you're looking down? And what are you looking at when you're looking down? What are you fixated on? Hey, listen, let it, watch, let it go. If it's become too big in your life, just get rid of it. You could just get rid of it. You could. You could go buy a rotary phone. I don't know, probably. A cup with a string. A carrier pigeon. I don't care. Anything's better than losing your soul in this stuff, right? So the invitation today is this: to put it down and to look up so that you can see what God is calling you to. Jesus Christ is calling you to look to him. If you have not trusted in him, trust in him. If you have trusted in him but you've stopped looking at him, look at him. Look at the cross. See the beauty of the glory that has come and is coming. Church, look up. Look up and see. Pray with me. Oh God, help us to set down our idols, whatever they are. Maybe it's a phone, maybe it's social media, maybe it's whatever, 1,000 other things. I don't know.